You can't rely on blind faith to get the pregnancy support you deserve. Ritual's Essential Prenatal Multivitamin is the only leading prenatal backed by its own human clinical trial. Essential Prenatal is proven to deliver key nutrients, including folate, biotin, and vitamin D during pregnancy. Get 25% off when you visit ritual.com/clinical. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Hey, everybody. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to Beekeeping for Newbies. Thank you very, very much for taking the time to listen. I do appreciate you. As always, feel free to join us over in the Discord room if you go to beekeepingfornewbies.com. That's N-E-W-B-E-E-S.com. There is a link there to the Discord page. And while you're there, feel free to check out our download section. We've got nuke plans, swarm trap plans. We just added a new pollen guide. So this was kind of a funny sidebar here. But one of the Discord members had messaged and said, hey, I've been using this little pollen guide if everybody wants to take a look at it, and just kind of was sharing with the rest of the group. And I looked at it and I thought, man, that thing looks really familiar. And I actually had the same one. I think I had downloaded it from the same source they had. So I went ahead and cleaned up the document just a little bit to delete some things that were kind of incomplete on it, and uploaded that to the downloads section as well. So it's a guide that can tell you if you see, you know, yellow pollen coming in, here's the three things that might be at this time of year, and kind of a neat little handy guide to help, you know, decipher what some of the different colored pollens that you might see coming in on the pollen sacks of your bees would be. And don't forget to hit us up over at bestbeekeepinggear.com. I think we've got maybe 20 or 30 articles over there, just things about, you know, what is the varroa mite? What are the treatment options? A couple different thoughts and ideas around that, why it's so important to treat. We've also got a few articles on introductory beekeeping concepts, a little bit of a shopping list, and a couple other odds and ends. So jump over there. And worst case scenario, if you can't get any help anywhere else, feel free to drop me an email, jeff@beekeepingfornewbies.com. Okay, I want to kick off today. This is episode 156. We're talking about comb today, and we're doing a lot of different things with comb. I figured it makes sense. First off, one of our members was like, hey, I'm kind of struggling in the comb space, trying to understand things a little bit better. And I thought, all right, we're going to do an episode on that and we'll talk about it. But before we dive in, I want to thank, and I don't thank everybody enough, so I really want to make sure I do this. So a couple of longtime supporters. So Melissa, DJ, Amy, thank you for your longtime support. And some of our newer folks, Amy, Sherry, Andrew, Z-Man, Hunter, Michelle, Jason, Joe, Aaron, Craig. Thank all of you. Thanks to all of you for your support. It makes a huge difference. Those of you, especially if you signed up for like the drone or the worker or queen memberships we have over on Buy Me a Coffee, those things really, really go a long way to supporting the channel, supporting the podcast, helping us grow, helping us do more cool and neat things. So thank you, thank you, thank you. All right. So as you may have noticed, there was no episode last week, and last week was headache week. So like I literally woke up Monday morning with a headache. And it didn't really go away until Thursday. And finally, by the time I got caught up on everything, I just decided not to do an episode last week. But we will make up for it this week. I think I'm going to have today's out. We're going to get another one on Thursday. I've already got notes kind of ready for that. And then I'm going to put another one out probably either at the end of the week, or I'll just stay on schedule and get another one next week. But we'll try to get back on schedule here. And it's kind of a sad time of year. I don't want to derail things, but as you guys know, I'm the master of tangents and I like to go all over the place because it's a chaotic place up here in this brain of mine. But it's getting to be kind of a sad time of year. And I can see it in a lot of ways. First off, it's really obvious in the metrics because we get a really big ramp up of people listening to the podcast, participating in the Discord room, like just across the board through all methods of communication. Big ramp up January, February. And right around now, like clockwork, everything slows down. And what happens is that is in line with what's going on with a lot of you as beekeepers caring for your bees, and you don't quite know it yet. You've been used to, like, your only beekeeping experience so far, if you're a first-year beekeeper, is what you saw in, like, April and May. And you're like, oh my God, this is so amazing. We got all this nectar coming in, pollen coming in, the bees are ramping up, things are growing and expanding, and everything is great and so amazing, and I love it. And then you're about to get slapped down with a dearth or all the challenges that come up in the summertime. And so we're going to do a separate episode just kind of reminding everybody about all of the things that are likely coming up. Now, this is absolutely very, very regional. Some places at this time of year are going to have a flow from now until the end of August or early September, And a lot of places are going to have a dearth from now until August or September. So it's just really, really going to be regional. And I'm speaking specifically to the U.S. If you're in, of course, if you're in Australia, thank you to my Australian brothers and sisters. I enjoy talking to you guys regularly in the Discord room, but they're going into winter. So they're in their cool season already. But if you're in the U.K. or anywhere in the Northern Hemisphere, you know, you are going to have absolutely completely different, you know, forage and different cycles than I have where I am and a lot of folks here in the States. But on that note, if you'd like to represent your state or even your country in beekeeping, like I think right now in the Discord room, we've got a four-way tie between Texas, Indiana, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. So, for the most members by state. And I think we just got our recent first Alaskan recently. And, of course, we got our friends up in Manitoba and BC up in Canada. But let your voice be heard. Let us know. But like I said, things are starting to slow down, not only in our, you know, Discord community and other places. And it's just that cyclical nature of beekeeping. I think what happens is a lot of people start off and they're excited and things are going well. And then they have some kind of a disease issue. You have some swarms. People gave you bad advice. I can't tell you how many times this year I've heard somebody say, yeah, my mentor told me that nukes won't swarm. And I'm like, ooh, yeah, we need to talk about that. Okay, so enough non-topic related. Okay, one more non-topic related things. So I need to tell you a quick story about Todd. This is only going to take about 60 seconds or so. So Todd is a dear, beloved member of the family. And Todd is a, what do you call him, like an orange cat, basically. And because he was like so big and stout, there's a few other reasons why we named him Todd, because he's kind of like a tough guy, you know. But we named him Todd, and, you know, he's a super cool cat. But he's a little more edgy. Like, he was a feral cat that, you know, has since been domesticated himself. So Phoebe, everybody knows Phoebe the Phoebe Keeper, comes up to me today and says, hey, I'm giving Todd a bath today. And I'm like, are you sure you want to do that? Because he's one of those, like, some cats just love to be pet all the time. They're very lovey-dovey. They're very tolerant. Todd's not so tolerant. He's a little bit more on the aggressive side. And there are certain things, man, you don't want to pet him near the belly or anything. He gets a little wild. So Phoebe's like, yeah, I'm giving Todd a bath today. And I was like, why would you do this? So she has her reasoning, which makes sense. But I'm like, all right, let me go get you some welding gloves and a few other things you can put on to help protect your arms, because that cat's going to go nuts. So if you do hear a really, really loud, you know, screaming cat sound and bathtub water splashing or anything in the background, don't worry, that's just Phoebe wrestling with Todd. So today we're going to talk all about comb, and we're going to go through kind of like all the four W's, I think it is, and the one H, right? So the who, how, when, what, where. We're going to talk all about comb because it's really important. A lot of people, you know, myself included, right? Every time you hear me say something, just know that I've lived this pain with all of you as well. So we're all experiencing the same things, or at least we have at one point in time or another. But I just didn't completely understand the whole wax thing. I just thought, well, bees need comb. And if I put a bunch of bees into a box, they should just instinctively draw comb, just like they would instinctively go and forage, or they would instinctively defend the hive. I just thought that they instinctively just make honeycomb. Like, that's kind of what they do. And they do if there is a nectar flow. If there is, and it can be a natural nectar flow via plants, flowers, trees, and the natural forage in the environment. Or it can be a synthetic pollen flow based on you feeding them sugar syrup or some other kind of a supplemental feed like that, primarily like a nectar-based feed or a syrup feed. If they don't have food coming, and it's kind of common sense, the best example I could think of, just kind of, you know, thinking about it this morning, is if you had a shed and you're doing yard work, you know, you have hand tools and different things. So you buy a little, like an 8x8 shed, and you put all your stuff in the shed. And then over the years, you decide, well, I'm going to put my push mower in there, and you start pushing things side to side. And then you're like, you know what? I need more room. I'm going to just go ahead and put a 12x12 shed up, you know, a few feet away from this one or whatever, you know, somewhere else on your property. So now you've got this 12x12 shed. You've got your riding mower in there. You put your tiller in so that you can do, you know, till up your garden in the spring. You know, you start adding more things, especially as you get older, or even worse, as like in my situation, when loved ones passed away. You know, I had to go through their house and get all their stuff out. So now I've got like 4,000 rakes, 300 shovels, you know, that kind of, you know, so you need a place to put all this. So when you need space, you make or acquire or find new space. Bees are the exact same way. When they need a place to raise brood, they will draw more comb if it's not there. When they need a place to store nectar and pollen and everything else that they use, they will draw the comb for that. But they will not do it. It is very resource intensive. It's exhaustive. It takes a lot of energy and resources for them personally to make this comb and to make the wax that becomes the comb. So they don't just do it, you know, for fun or just because they're bored. So let's go ahead and dive into this here. We're going to start with the who. And the who of the building is the workers that have graduated from that nurse bee status. Now, these days, it's kind of a moving scale based on the time of year, based on the conditions, based on the number of foragers lost. As more foragers are lost, there's less forager pheromone, and you know, more other bees need to promote up into that role. But as a rough ballpark, once a nurse bee is finished being a nurse bee, she's going to move up into an age where her wax glands will develop and she can begin to create wax. So that's kind of the next logical role for her to be assuming within the hive. But again, you've got to have an inflow of nectar for them to have that desire to do that. And I think it's important to remember too is to differentiate between like a nectar flowing nectar from the environment or a feed versus honey, right? So the honey is their long-term storage. This is, oh no, there's nothing else and we need to live. We eat the honey to survive. They don't take honey and then say, oh cool, we have honey, let's draw comb and get ready to raise brood. If they have honey, but they don't have an inflow of nectar, they're not going to draw comb. So I wanted to just kind of mention that because we always talk a lot about giving honey frames to bees, which I think is a great idea. It's a great fallback. It's a great emergency thing for them to have, especially if you have surplus frames around. I just want you to be mindful that that is not going to stimulate brood production. It's not going to stimulate the nurse bees and the rest of the colony to raise new brood. So just kind of keep that in the back of your mind. Okay, so the what on comb, what is comb? Well, that's the obvious one. We know what comb is. It is the foundation for everything in the hive. So whether it's for brood rearing, pollen storage, honey storage, bee bread, drone production, swarm cells, all of those things are going to require a inflow of resources that allow them to generate and have the energy needed to create the wax. Now, a quick little thing to add to that, what you can also do to help and to kind of reduce the amount of resources they have to use is by giving them actual wax foundation versus plastic. If you're giving them a wax foundation, they can actually draw that up and mix that in with their own wax secretions, and they can actually draw a little bit more quickly, a little more rapidly. If you don't want to do that, what a lot of people will do, though, just to kind of help them along, is they put what they call a starter strip. There was a crashing noise in the background. I think that might have been Todd. Anyway, they'll put a starter strip in. So if you look at the top bar on a frame, the top wooden bar on the inside where the foundation should normally be, you can just take a 1 to 2 inch strip of wax foundation that you would get, if you just bought wax foundation from any commercial supplier. You can usually cut one piece into about 5 or 6 of these starter strips, and you just kind of insert that into that, the bottom of the top bar, and that just kind of gives them a starting point, like, oh, okay, this is where we should start from. Kind of helps give them a little bit of a boost. That's one thing I like to do. I don't always do it, but it's another one of the many options that you have available to you. It's definitely something. In fact, I'm going to go ahead and add that to my video list to show you guys how to make those little starter strips, because they're really easy to do and it certainly helps. Now, getting into the when, we talked about when. Of course, this is during a nectar flow. Another thing to keep in mind is when you see comb production beginning to diminish, that is another indicator that you may have a tapering of a flow. So you're not going to see, as far as when, we talked a little bit about some conditions that are right for when you will see it, but if the nectar flow dries up, if you're in a dearth, any of those conditions would be times when they would not be building it. Now, I want to talk a little bit about the where. So we talked about like starter strips and getting foundation in place and letting them use, wax foundation. But there are other options for foundation, and you can go with plastic foundation. You can do an all plastic frame. So plastic foundation on a wooden frame, all plastic. You can do top bar only, where it's just, like a wooden top bar, maybe a little bit of a starter strip, and they'll draw down from that. lots of different ways in which the colony can build everything out. I've always, as you guys know, I've always focused on just the Langstroth. So we just have one thing as a baseline, you know, to work from. So we're when we're talking about things, it's consistent kind of across the board. The nuances, you know, there's just things that are just slightly different with other types of hives. We'll use the top bar as an example, where it's literally just a top bar. You don't have the side, you know, the side supporting pieces of a frame like you do in a Langstroth. Very, very cool. It's very natural. When you remove that top bar, you'll see what you would typically expect to see. Like if you looked in a cutout that they've done in a building or something like that, where it has that kind of ovular, kind of rounded shape to it, perfectly normal in that kind of configuration. But the things I want you to really, pay attention to, or maybe be mindful of, is kind of some of the signals and indicators that the colony will give to you when either there is something wrong with alignment or there is a need for them to draw comb and they don't have room, you know, things like that. So we're going to talk about some types of comb that are often used interchangeably. When you hear these words, a lot of people use them the same way. They kind of mean the same thing, sort of, but a lot of it is based on proximity. Whenever you open the hive, let's say that you're starting out, you got just real simple, double deep configuration. You pop the outer cover off, you're peeling the inner cover off, and there's a whole lot of comb on the inside of that inner cover. What they've done is they've run out of space. There's no space inside the rest of the, you know, the two deep boxes that are there. All the frames are full. And they're starting to build up in that little tiny extra space that's up there. They're going to try to build out of it. So the things you would hear people call this is, if it's a connective kind of comb, they would call it like bridge comb or brace comb. You know, a lot of times that's more associated with like the side, like your side frames are now connected to the side wall. Okay, well, that's going to be brace comb. And then you have two frames that are connected to each other forming like a bridge. Okay, it's bridge comb. Everyone's favorite, the wonky comb, which normally wonky comb is what we talk about when you have like a plastic frame or plastic foundation that maybe either hasn't been treated, like pre-treated with wax, beeswax ahead of time, or for whatever reason, they just aren't drawing it up effectively. And you end up with these kind of like 2 to 6 inch wide strips of comb coming down them, and it's not all connected and it's very disorganized. That's kind of what we call the wonky comb. But here's the thing I want you to take away. Forget about the burr, brace, comb, bridge, you know, whatever, wonky, all the different things and terms that people use. Forget all of that. Just know that there are some basic things that happen, and we'll talk about how you address them. So I just mentioned you pull the lid off. There's a lot of stuff stuck to the top. That's very normal when they're out of space. But you can also see that on the tops of the frames, when you see that brand new, really white comb kind of coming in, on top of the frames, when you're on the very top after you pulled that inner cover off, let's say it wasn't stuck together, but you see the presence of that burr comb up there, that is an indicator like, hey, they're trying to find more space that they can draw. So again, add another honey super, or if you're, depending on your configuration, add space in one way or another. Now that's pretty easy to manage. There's another one that I want to tell you about there that's really important, and it would be really noticeable under the circumstances I just gave you where you have comb trying to be built all the way up into the inner cover. In that scenario, what often happens is they will connect the space between those two deeps. So if you think about it, you've got about an inch and a half or two between those two frames, and what they will do is they will start drawing comb up from that lower deep up into the top deep. So you pull that top deep off and you have just ripped open probably anywhere between one and maybe four frames of, typically it ends up being like brood comb. That space in between, it ends up being brood comb. And then you have all this open drone brood. Did I just say brood comb? Drone comb? Anyway, drone comb. It's all drone comb, you typically. But one way or another, you're going to expose a whole bunch of brood. You're going to rip everything open, and they are not going to be happy. So the one habit I've gotten into, and I kind of do this all the time now for established colonies, not as much of an issue for like a year one or a brand new colony, but you'll see me do this a lot. Outer cover comes off, inner cover comes off, and then I'll put the hive tool in between my upper and lower deep and start doing a little bit of separation. And I'll lift it up just a tiny little bit to get the separation started. And then I will twist the whole thing between 45 to 90 degrees and then lift up. Now, yes, it can still obviously cause a lot of damage, but sometimes it'll make a little bit of a cleaner break and it'll reduce the vertical, like the up and down tearing or ripping of the comb off of the frames. So you can twist it sideways and kind of create a bend point and then lift up. I hope that makes sense. Let me add that to my video list as well. Okay, I just added that to my video to-do list here because that makes a lot of sense, I think, to be able to have a visual on that to understand what I'm talking about. So that's a good way to address that, you know, from one hive body to the next connection. Now, when you're looking at, let's just talk about an edge frame. So you have a frame on the edge and it gets connected to the side. You know, they connect the comb to the sidewall. With that one, all I typically will do is just slide the hive tool down in between wherever that is and just, you know, separate it near the wall. And then when I remove the frame, I'll scrape off the excess. Now, what you can do is if you want, you can go ahead and any excess you scrape off, you can put it in a bag or a bucket or, you know, keep it with you because that's great to be used later on if you want to melt it down to pre-treat your frames in the future. Those plastic frames really ideally need to be pre-treated to maximize their effectiveness and likelihood of the bees drawing that comb onto that foundation. So save anything you scrape off. You'll definitely use it again later. So separating them from the frame and the sidewall, that's pretty straightforward. That's not a big deal. Where it starts to get challenging is, and I almost have to have a little explanation first. What a lot of people will tell you is, let's just, again, 10 frame setup. They will tell you that you should have spacing between the sidewall of the hive body and frame one, and then spacing between frame 10 and the sidewall, and that every other frame should all be pushed up against one another. That's what everybody always tells you. Now, as I always tell you, do whatever works for you. Whatever makes you happy, whatever works, do it. I do not push my frames together, and I know that this is not a popular opinion. So again, shop around, ask other people what their opinion is. But the reason I do not push them all together, what I do is I typically will inspect roughly the same way. If I have, let's say it's a couple of cinder blocks or one cinder block with 4x4s and all of my hives are on that, if I'm on the one end, I will always inspect from that one side. If I'm on the opposite end, I will always inspect from that outer side. I usually position one frame. It's in position 1 or 10, however you want to number them. I will use that one frame. I will give it extra space. That is typically the only frame that I would put up against its adjacent frame. So frame 1 might be up against, you know, frame 2, but there's a lot of space between frame 1 and the wall. Because what I want to do is take my hive tool, put it in between frames 1 and 2 on that outer lip, that edge that is that comes off of each frame. Separate both of them, use the tool to completely remove frame number 1. You can put it in a frame rack, you can put it in a hive body that you have with you if you need to, and you can do it without getting the frame completely covered in pine needles and other debris or whatever. You can set it, you know, kind of on the ground, leaned up against the hive as long as it doesn't get dirty and nasty. But that's the only frame that is different from the others. The rest of my frames, I will evenly space them as best I can apart. Now, people who are discussing, teaching, educating, whatever you want to call it, around how to put all your frames in and around all the reasons why you have problems with comb and things like that, they're going to tell you that, oh, no, you got to have the frames up against one another because that prevents that. Okay, I can tell you that that's not true. What they can actually do is they can still propolize the frames together. They can still draw comb from one side and bridge it over to the other frame, so it doesn't prevent those things. The primary number one reason, and this is another one of those that's a hill that I'm going to die on, so you're not going to convince me otherwise, but feel free to try. The primary reason that I do not push all of them together, because if you push all of them together when you are packing up the hive and you're going to walk away for the day, how many bees are getting squished and crushed on both sides of that frame, every single frame down that line. So for between frames 1 and 2 all the way down to 9 and 10, those spaces that are in between there, every time you decide you have to squeeze them all up against one another, I guarantee you you're squishing bees. So how long does it take? Because people talk all the time about, oh, you know, I crushed my queen during an inspection. Now that's terrible. I can see lots of ways that it would happen. I have, you know, fortunately, I've never had that happen to me, that at least that I know of. But I feel like, why would you increase the possibility or probability of that by squishing them all up against one another, like when you're leaving? Like, I can see if you want to start them that way, you want to put them all together to get things started or whatever. Okay, that's fine. You know, if that's what you want to do. But once you have a lot of bees in there moving around, you got to know you're crushing bees every time you push those frames up against one another. I don't do it. Now, to address the problem, people say, oh, well, they're more likely to draw comb in a weird way and from one frame to the next. The way that I work around this is, first off, wax foundation. I've always had better luck with wax foundation over any of the plastics and things like that. But even so, you can still get them to draw a nice comb on them if you're pre-treating like we discussed. Sometimes they will have comb that will bridge from one frame to another. And all that I do when this happens is I stick the hive tool down in between the two and I just separate them. And if there is a scenario where it looks kind of bad and I'm looking down, I'm like, ooh, wow, that looks like it's going across, you know, more space than I want it to, then I go ahead and separate the two. I try to separate the two together to remove them as a unit so that I can kind of work with them a little bit better on the outside. And then you can use either a hive tool or even a larger, I keep a fillet knife around. They're really handy for like cutting out queen cells. If you have all wax foundation, you can just like fillet knife a nice little cut. Or if you wanted to get some eggs out to put into another colony, it's like a cheap, you know, the cheap man's grafting way. You know, you just go ahead and cut a section of comb with a bunch of eggs out, stick it into a queenless hive with a whole bunch of nurse bees, and they'll raise a queen cell. So I take that fillet knife, and then I can really cleanly cut in between the two. Another thing that I'll do is when comb gets drawn in a way that I don't exactly like, then I just pull the frame out and I give them more space. And yes, that can make the problem worse. Yes, they can tend to draw the comb out even deeper. And yes, I have reduced the available space in my 10-frame setup by 1/10. I don't care. Like, I really don't care. You don't have to have 10 frames in there. You want to run 9, run 9. You want to run 8, run 8. You know, they will draw the comb deeper. They will be more apt to do things in a way that's a little bit kind of goofy and not as clean and doesn't necessarily look as good. But who cares, right? It's your hive. They're your bees. If it works and you're able to raise brood and they can store the resources they need and they can move around and they're happy, it doesn't matter. So I don't squish my frames together because I don't want to squish bees every time. That's my reasoning behind it. I'm sticking with it. Okay, so we kind of discussed a few of the ways. I'm trying to think off the top of my head here if there's anything that I missed with regard to comb management. So just any time you have comb that is in a place you don't want it, right? And this would be, you know, if you have a lot of excess hanging off the bottom of the frame, flip the frame over, do a nice scrape, drop it down into a little bucket, drop it back in the hive. I kind of do just a general frame maintenance, not so much when it's busy, when you're managing a whole bunch of hives. Like, individual frame maintenance is just not a priority. You take it out. If it's not obstructing anything or connecting to something else or causing a problem, you take a look, you drop it back in, you move on to the next one. If you're just enjoying 2, 3, 5 hives of your own, yeah, take your time. If it's some excess burr comb or a little bit of brace comb or bridge comb or whatever you want to call it and wherever it happens to be located, scrape it off, drop it in the bucket, and put it back in. Now, one thing I want to talk about it's related, obviously, because it deals with comb and with wax drawing and everything, but it is a little bit of a kind of a side discussion with sort of like frame management. It's strange as a new beekeeper because you don't know all the details. So I can tell you right now, oh yeah, you can do this. And you're like, oh, cool. And it's 100% right. We're both right to suggest it and you're both right to try it. I didn't give you all the details. Let me give you an example. Checkerboarding. People will say like, oh, well, if you want to encourage them to draw, you just got a checkerboard. You can tell 10 beekeepers between April 1st and August 15th, you should checkerboard. And I guarantee you that like three or four of them are going to be like, yeah, it worked great. It was so amazing. Thank you for that suggestion. And like the other 6 or 7 are going to be like, they didn't do anything with it. That is terrible. It doesn't work at all. Now think about that right there. What just happened is you gave somebody a good factual piece of actionable information, actionable intelligence, right? And they tried to use it and it didn't work. So now you go into the forums and you have people being like, well, yeah, you should never checkerboard because it doesn't work, right? So now you got now you got to tell this person, well, yeah, it does work under the right conditions. Well, I tried it and it didn't work, right? So it's like you're creating, it almost like it becomes this monster of its own, and nobody was really wrong. It was all done with the right of, you know, the best of intentions. So checkerboarding, if you're not familiar with this, think about a checkerboard where you have like a red square and a black square, you know, or whatever colors you want to use. Two contrasting colors on a checkerboard, and every other square is a different color. What you would do in checkerboarding with a beehive, and the real recommendation is, if you're going to do this, to do it with honey frames, right? I don't really recommend it with brood frames. When the honeybees and the colony create their brood chamber, they put things where they want them. You can do whatever you want to do, and they're going to move everything back. So don't make extra work for them. But what it's really great, we've talked about it a lot, but I know there's a lot of new folks, so thank you very much for listening. But if you need them to draw a single piece of comb, you can literally just go right into that number five, number six, right in the middle position, drop a frame of foundation or just wax foundation or whatever you're using, and they will draw that up very quickly because that's their brood space where they, you know, where they want to raise brood. But that is not going to work in a dearth. Now, if you do that and it is a flow and everything's going great, they're going to draw that up really quickly. They're going to make use of the space. And now you can move that frame up into the hive, you know, hive body above it. And that will have them following the bees. The nurse bees will follow the brood up into that upper brood chamber and continue expanding up there. That's great. But if you go into the brood chamber and you literally do like every other frame, you have resources, blank foundation, resources, blank foundation, resources, blank foundation, all the way through. Here are some of the challenges that creates. One, brand new hive, small cluster, you know, brand new colony, small cluster. Maybe it's from a package of bees or whatever it might be. You start checkerboarding. It's more difficult for them to keep everything warm, right? They need the existing colony, and the bees in the colony need to keep that brood warm. And it's really a lot easier to do that when they have all the brood in the middle and they can form a nice cluster around it and protect it. You start spreading things out all over the place, that can become problematic. So it causes some early season challenges. Two, they like to keep things, you know, a lot of times it's all within one frame, so it's easy. You'll have, you know, brood in the center, the edges will have some honey, a little bit of a layer of pollen in between. And that's kind of normally how it looks, but lots of times things are going fast and furious, and sometimes you'll see just a whole frame that's just nothing but pollen, right? Long-term pollen storage. And it's great for them to just run over and grab some of that and then come back. But if you have that like four frames over, then they got to run four frames over versus going to the next frame. So in the brood space, I really don't recommend checkerboarding. Again, you like doing it. Your mentor says it's the only way to do it, and that's what you want to do. Your bees do whatever you want to do. I will checkerboard I will give the thumbs up to checkerboarding in a honey super. I can't remember ever doing that, but you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with it. The nice thing is once you have your drawn comb, like your drawn comb is gold. And there are a lot of people who are going to just they will literally feed their bees from April through September, October, just to have them constantly raising brood, drawn comb, raising brood, drawn comb. And then they end up with like, you know, two deeps worth of drawn comb or even a couple mediums worth of drawn comb. And then next year, man, they can just throw those on and the bees will use that space almost immediately. And it's really great. I'm just super terrible at storing it. I always like leave it out where it shouldn't be. Wax moth gets to it. I'm a bad drawn comb storer, so I don't have a lot of surplus. But anyway, I don't usually, you know, like I don't checkerboard, but people who do checkerboard, do that in your honey supers and leave the brood space alone, my opinion. But the people who try it and they go, well, checkerboarding doesn't work. Remember what we talked about at the very beginning of the discussion today. You've got to have some kind of a flow, whether it's natural or synthetic. You've got to have some kind of a flow, and you've got to have those young bees in order for them to create the wax, to draw the comb, to do what you want them to do. So checkerboarding does work under the right conditions and circumstances. Now, the one more thing I wanted to kind of address while we're in the frame and wax discussion, because this is still very generic. Like, I haven't really, you know, I haven't gone too deep with the discussion on the frames themselves or even some of the management, you know, approaches around the comb. I feel like these are definitely video type things to do. So I did update during the episode here today. I did update the notes on some things that I need to definitely be showing everybody because the visual aspect of it will make a huge difference. But what I want to talk about now is, you know, when you're buying your wooden frames with the plastic foundation, you quite frequently have the option to go with either the black, you know, the black foundation or the yellow. What I used to do is I would buy all of the black for my brood chambers and all of my honey supers were always yellow, and I did this for years. The idea behind this was, if you have a light cream-colored egg that a queen were to lay on a frame and the background to that egg was black foundation, it would make it easier to see, which I definitely do agree with that. I guess the one, you know, kind of challenge with it would be if it's black or yellow, whatever the color might be, is if it's a brood, you know, a brood frame, it's going to darken up very quickly. You might get half or even a full season of that, you know, that brood frame being a lighter color and slightly brown and getting darker and darker. But by season two, it's really dark generally. So whether you use a light colored foundation or not, I have not seen a big difference. Now, I have heard people say that they have noticed that the acceptance of the darker foundation is not as high or as good as some beekeepers have seen with the yellow. So keep that in mind. You can try both of them, you know, maybe buy a box of each and mix them up, you know, within your hive bodies and see which ones they respond to better. Pre-treating those plastic foundation frames is absolutely critical. They'll tell you that, oh, it comes pre-waxed. It comes double pre-waxed. I would still wax them anyway. I mean, it's not that expensive to buy a brick of the, you know, the beeswax. I bought for $3.50. I went down to the local thrift store, Goodwill, and I bought a nice little pot, and you can just melt your wax. I think I bought a box of like 20 or 30 brushes from Harbor Freight for $4. I just brush them on. You want to brush, use a roller, whatever you want to use, but pre-treat those frames, and that's going to really increase the acceptance. Whether they're black or yellow, I don't think it's worth doing a study on, but like I said, some people have said they have better response with just the yellow foundation. All right, everybody. Well, I hope that this is helpful because, you know, the whole comb and you know, drawing of comb and the wax foundation and all these things, it's kind of tricky, and I don't think it's necessarily the most intuitive thing. Like I mentioned at the beginning, when you have bees and you put them into a hive, you're just thinking that they just make comb. That's what they do. And that to me is very intuitive. I think it just makes sense. But understanding the biological aspects of it and understanding their need to have a food source and how resource intensive that it is for them to create the wax and to draw the comb. You know, now that you kind of have that information, I think it makes a lot of sense. And hopefully that, you know, you're able to better kind of tackle and approach some of the challenges that you might see, you know, with your comb drawing and getting them to cooperate. This is an ongoing challenge. All beekeepers kind of deal with it at one time or another. And you know, you'll develop your own tricks of the trade as time goes by. But if I missed anything, feel free to jump in our Discord room. The link for that is right off the Beekeeping for Newbies homepage. Drop me an email if you like. We got a few videos on youtube.com/@beekeepingfornewbies. I haven't put any new content up in a while, which is a separate story I'm going to talk to you about probably in the next episode or two. I've got a couple of episodes teed up this week. So I'll talk more about why I haven't done the videos that I was planning to do this spring. We're going to talk about that soon. And thank you to everyone who supports the channel and the podcast. It makes a huge difference, and I just can't do it without you. So thank you so very, very much. Okay, everybody, that's all I got for you today. Take care, be kind to one another, and remember that I love you, and there's nothing you can do about it. We'll talk to you soon.
With the Redfin app, you'll know the moment your next place hits the market. Whether you're looking to buy your dream home or rent a sweet apartment, give Redfin your gotta-have-it wish list of property features, and you'll receive real-time notifications tailored just for you. Ready to see it up close and personal? Scheduling a tour is just a tap away. Don't wait to find your perfect match. Download the Redfin app and start searching today.